This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone, and welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 2 Legal Regulatory Issues held on the 13th of July, 2017. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to Michael Fleming. Please begin.
Good morning, good evening, and good afternoon, and welcome to another session of the Working Track 2, Subsequent Procedures. Today's discussion will be held on the CC2 comments, mainly on the registry agreement. Could we please go to the next slide? So today, first of all, is our welcome introduction. I hope my welcome was warm enough for everyone. Next, we have SOI updates. If anyone has an update to their SOI, please, I'll pause for a minute and feel free to speak up. Hearing none, if you do have an SOI update, please feel free to leave it in the chat and staff will take note of that. Next, we'll be moving to a discussion recap, which we will be basically going over what we previously spoke or what we previously discussed in regards to the topic of the base registry agreement, and then we'll be looking at the CC2 comments as for what feedback we received from the community in regards to this subject. Can we go to the next slide, please? Just before we get started, I would like to inform everyone of what our goals will be for this discussion as well as moving forward in the next few weeks. First of all, we are at the point where we're going through the second pass of all of our discussions, and therefore we will be moving forward to deliberations as well as proposals for our initial report that I believe is due out in September or October. Jeff, please feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. This session will be discussing specifically the CC2 comments and try to engage feedback and discussion and see if we need to reach out to the community member that gave the comment for follow-up questions. And our next meeting, we hope to have some deliberations based upon what we've discussed here and what the feedback we have received in the CC2 comments. Can we please move on to the next slide? Okay, wait, before we do that, I just want to ask everyone if they feel that this is the right path forward or if we should take a different approach to addressing how we will be taking consensus. And I'd kind of like to ask Jeff to provide some, and his leadership in his position as co-chair of the working group, how to kind of provide guidance of how we will be moving forward with consensus and how will be the steps forward in regards to that.
Okay, thanks, Michael, for putting me on the spot. So I think, look, our job right now is to go over the comments and to see if we are leaning towards certain positions. The next time we go through this material, we are going to, I don't mean next time meaning the next call, but the next time when we go through this type of material again, later on, several months from now, I would assume, we will have, as Michael said, around October timeframe, we will have preliminary recommendations, and at that point in time, we will basically try to judge consensus by looking for those evidence of support and essentially a lack of objection. We're trying to stay away from polling simply because polling often skews results depending on how many people from different places of the community are involved, and so rather than just looking at individual numbers, we like to look at levels of support from different areas of the community. And then obviously to the extent that we can use the PDP guidelines to measure consensus, which we can put a link to at some point in here. We will then use that kind of structure to measure consensus at that point in time. But at this point, we're really just trying to see if there are some evident trends that we can then take back, we being the entire leadership team, including the work track chairs, to see if we can produce preliminary recommendations. I hope that helps.
Thank you. That does. Thank you, Jeff, and apologies about putting you on the spot. Does anyone have any questions in regards to that? No? Then let's go ahead and jump in. Now we can move to the next slide. Thank you. So kind of a recap of where we are at now. First of all, we've only discussed one item in regards to what the base registry agreement. There were a multitude of questions that we were tasked with in the issues report, but mainly what we did address was the single registry agreement versus the multiple registry agreements. This discussion was dependent and greatly dependent on the fact of whether or not we would have multiple categories. That itself is still a discussion that does not have a conclusion on it. So our discussion here could change depending on how we move forward with that. So when we did discuss this last time, we looked at the pros and cons of the single registry agreement as well as the multiple registry agreement. In the single RA, the pros were seen as predictability, fairness, efficiency, lack of clear, and the fact that lack of clear and definitive boundaries around potential categories for different RAs would, and then as for the multiple RAs, this was introduced as kind of the fact that there was a need for ICANN to recognize and support different TLD business models, again, the different categories. And it was also very difficult to obtain exemptions in the 2012 round, or in other words, to negotiate with ICANN in regards to the RA itself. And through discussing that, some of the possible compromises were a scaled-back core agreement that would basically be one simple agreement with additional specifications per category of TLD, and a single agreement with a more clear, structured, and efficient method for obtaining exemptions or negotiating. So can we move to the next slide, please? Thank you. So staff has gone through, and mainly Emily has thankfully put together a wonderful kind of a summary of the CC2 questions in regards to this topic. There were a lot of comments, and I want to thank everyone out there that put effort into providing feedback, but it's nearly impossible for us to go over all of that in one session. So what we're going to do is we're going to base our discussions on the summaries that has been provided, but at the same time, decisions and, of course, our path forward will be based upon the actual comments that were presented. That's why I encourage everyone to please read those comments individually if you have not done so. Today, what we'll be looking at first is the first question here. I'm just going to read this off so everyone knows exactly what the comments are addressing. The first question is, the question of whether or not a single registry is suitable is tied into the subject of different TLD categories. Throughout the working group's discussions, there has been support for a model similar to what is currently in place, a single registry agreement with exemptions that allow for tiers with different operational modules. Example given, specification 13 for brand TLDs or specification 12 for community TLDs. There is also support for different registry agreements for different TLD categories centered around a common core base set of contractual requirements. Which of these models do you think would be most effective for recognizing the different operational requirements of different TLDs? Which of these models do you think would be most efficient in terms of development, implementation, and operational execution? Example given, contracting, contractual compliance, etc. Do you think there are any alternative options that could effectively facilitate TLDs with different operational requirements? So in addressing this question, I'd like to ask staff to switch over to the summaries document. Please. Is it possible? Oh, perfect. Thank you very much. You can read my mind. So, based upon the summary, we received quite a few comments, and for comments that support a single base registry agreement with specific sections for different TLD types, we received, oh, Susan, go ahead.
Sorry, finish what you were saying first, and then I did have a comment.
Thank you. So, for as far as comments that were supporting a single base registry agreement with specific sections for different TLD types, we received comments from Janik, forgive me if I do not pronounce this correctly, Janik Scow, Inta, Nominet, DC, RG, John Poole, Affilius, RYSG, ALAC, and NCSG. Susan, now you can go ahead.
Thanks. Yeah, I wanted to just flag the BRG comment, because I can't see Martin on the call. I don't think the BRG comment was in favor of a single registry agreement. If you look at the actual comments that they submitted, and indeed the extract that's quoted there is not in favor of a single registry agreement. It's saying that for certain TLD types like a brand, their preference would be to have something much more tailored. But the BRG did then go on to sort of to say that if that wasn't the case, that they would support some kind of a stripped down base agreement with core provisions and then specifications added on, which I think is not quite what we currently have, but is sort of a development of what we currently have, if you like. The current version is a sort of one-size-fits-all contract, and then a couple of specs like Spec 13, which then delete certain provisions and put in a replacement as an alternative. And I think what the BRG is suggesting, and which seems to me to be a really good idea, is to work out what the real core is and that would apply to everyone and then tailor in specifications by add-on rather than by subtraction.
Thank you, Susan. I was going to actually point that out, but you jumped in and already provided that. So, yes, that is a very important factor, and that is why we ask that everyone look at the original comments themselves. Let's go through that when we get there right there. Emily has thankfully provided the full BRG comment in full, and I will reference that when reading these out. I am going to go through these, and then we will discuss the general idea behind it to see what everyone's feedback is. And I'm going to go rather quickly through these sample excerpts. So if you do have a question, please feel free to raise your hand at any time, and I see you jump to the top of the list. So from our first sample excerpt is from INTA. Having different RAs increases the risk of having different interpretations for similar provisions or create potential roadblocks for developing new models for registry operation. A single base RA provides flexibility for applicants to modify their applications as their business models change. So with this, we take note that there is flexibility in modifying the applications. From the BC, we have the comment, under such a framework, different operational models would still be taken into account. While the single RA would facilitate efficiency in development, implementation, and compliance, a single RA would also make it easier for a particular registry operator or TLD to move between categories as business needs evolved. So this is also, once again, highlighting flexibility. Now we're going to jump to the BRG comment, and as I said, I will read this one in full to make sure we capture the whole idea. In its current form, the base RA is skewed towards traditional models and does not adequately reflect the new models introduced in the 2012 round. This can be a barrier for new entrants that operate distinctly different models. While there is a significant difference between registry models and where these different models are a sizable proportion of registry operators, the BRG recommends customized RAs to better reflect those models and their distinct nature. So here we have the support for the customization. In this respect, the BRG favors a customized registry agreement for DOT brands to reflect the distinct differences against a traditional open and commercial registry. A significant proportion of new GTLDs were DOT brands, and we anticipate the continued interest in future application windows. In the absence of a customized RA for DOT brands or other distinct and sizable models, the BRG recommends the base agreement is stripped down to provide core provisions that are applicable to all with the relevant SPA. Kind of cut off there, but relevant, I think I have it on my own computer, but with the relevant, with the relevant specifications that define the model and variant provisions applicable to that model. The contracting parties associated with each defined model would be the parties responsible for negotiating and voting any changes to the related specification, while all registry operating under the RA would be responsible to negotiate and vote for any changes to the core base agreement. So, as Susan pointed out, first of all, we have the fact that that the BRG looks to and supports the customized the customized RAs first and foremost. And this would be per TLD category, if you will. And then if we cannot work towards that, then we would have the core registry agreement with the relevant specifications only being able to be modified or negotiated with ICANN for the TLDs that those specifications are applicable to. While at the core, all registries would be able to modify the, or at least take vote on negotiations per the whole registry, or the core registry. So, moving on, just to go quickly, we have a comment from the RYSG as well. With regard to efficiency in development, implementation, and operational execution, a single registry agreement is the most practical. Some factors include time required to develop each of the registry agreements for each of the categories, the ability of an registry operator or TLD to move between categories, the complexity of an amendment process such as that being undertaken at present where there are multiple registry agreements, administrative burden for ICANN and registry operators, predictability for ICANN, registry operators, and the Internet using public. Further, strict categorization and inflexible agreements may, in practice, stifle competition and innovation. So, the RYSG comment looks at not only flexibility, but it also looks at the fact of ICANN being burdened with multiple registry agreements, as well as a lack of predictability. And with the strict categorization, that it would be very, well, not flexible at all if we have multiple categories. So would anyone like to comment in regards to the support for the single registry agreement idea? From our last few discussions, I think that we had, that this is the main path that many of us are steering towards and much of the opinion is steering towards. Many of us do recognize that there will be TLD different, that we will likely have different TLD categories, or that in essence there are at least to a degree some form of different TLD categories, and having a core and simplified registry agreement with multiple, specifications pertaining to the specific TLD category would be the best route to move forward, I think, is what the main opinion is now. If we don't have any comments, I'm just going to move on towards the support for the multiple registry agreements.
Michael, it's Christina Rosette. I'm only on the phone. Can I speak? Oh, totally. No, please, be my guest. Be my guest.
Okay. All right. Amazon definitely supports the current model where you have a generally standard registry agreement with, to the extent that there are categories, specifications that deal with those. I realize that there's kind of a minor exception to that now with regard to the language within the body of the agreement that is applicable to governmental entities. But from the perspective of a registry operator, the idea of having completely or potentially completely different registry agreements for each category of TLD, quite frankly, makes my head hurt. It's going to be necessary to get separate approvals internally for each kind. It would be necessary to set up different processes and systems to ensure that we're tracking any proposed changes or negotiations to each different kind of agreement. Just the administrative headache on the registry operator side is significant, and I can't even imagine what that would be at scale for ICANN. And frankly, I would rather not have ICANN spending a lot of money, because we have made a decision that they are going to have 10 different types of registry agreements, because just the systems and the staff that will be needed for that will be a huge resource allocation.
Thank you. We have Gigi Levine with their hand up as well.
Yes, thank you.
Please go ahead.
And just to kind of echo what Christina has said, it seems that it would be somewhat of an administrative nightmare to try to get the community to agree on multiple registry agreements. And there's also the problem of strings or registry operators that might fall into more than one category. I think it introduces more complications than it settles. And that seems to be a common theme in the comments that we've received. So I just wanted to note that.
Thank you very much. Jim, I want to call on you, but I know that we're just about to go into the multiple registry agreements. Do you plan on speaking about that? And if you do, could I ask you to wait until I read through that?
I guess the only thing I wanted to, I touch on it in my comment, but something that Christina said about the expenditure of resources on ICANN's behalf to track multiple agreements. ICANN's a $100+ million organization. How they spend their money and how they prioritize that spending is something I think that needs to be on the table. It's just a question, they've got the resources, it's just a question of how they're allocating and how they're spending. And I'll pick up the rest of that one if we move to my section, but I don't think the lack of money is an issue for ICANN. It's just how they're spending it.
Thank you, Jim. Greg, I know you have your hand up too. Please go ahead.
Thanks. It's Greg Shatton for the record. I'm not sure exactly where this fits organizationally into the call, but it seems to me that the objections to completely separate registry agreements can be resolved by having more of a master and scheduled type of setup, or which is very common and understandable to anybody who does technology transactions of any sort, to have a master agreement that's the common core among all of the agreements, and then have the appropriate schedules based on the particular type of agreement. And it's simple enough if somebody changes their model to add the schedule or whatever it may be that pertains to the different model. The problem with the current agreement is that it contains far too many provisions that are not common across registry types, and therefore we end up subtracting from the base agreement. That creates a lot more confusion and, to to my mind, at least as much expenditure of resources. It's really just a matter of clarity of organization of the information in a way that treats all registry types, potential registry types, equally, and doesn't require certain registry types to essentially opt out of provisions that they never should have applied to them in the first place. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. And I know Susan said that this is what the BRG was saying. There's a separate agreement. This is what the BRG was looking for. If there is not a separate agreement. I also want to highlight that Sarah L. with VeriSign has said that she supports ICANN compliance and supporting negotiated contracts, but also that there would be an increased administration burden, but she supports the concept of contract negotiation versus contract acceptance and doesn't see why contracts can't be negotiated separately. And also, Trang has provided excellent feedback from ICANN, saying that there would be added complexity for ICANN compliance to enforce multiple versions of the RED contract as well. I'm going to go into the support for the multiple registry agreements very quickly as well. So if you have any more comments, can I just ask you to please wait a moment? Thank you. So supporting multiple registry agreements, and I did read out the BRG excerpt, so I'm not going to read that out again, but I'm going to read out what Jim Pendergrast has so kindly put out. If the goal of the new GTLD program is to increase competition among registry providers, then forcing everyone into a standard contract runs counter to these goals. Even with the identified specification variances, there is a limit to what registries can achieve with the current contracts. ICANN argued in the 2012 round that managing multiple implementations of a contract would be burdensome. I disagree. ICANN has returned to a $100+ million per year organization. Contract compliance is one of the bedrocks of the trust people place in the organization. If they need more resources to allow for multiple contracts, then a review of the existing allocations of resources should be undertaken. Jim, would you like to comment further in regards to that, or if anyone else would like to comment in regards to this, please feel free to raise your hand.
Yes, sure.
Go ahead,
sure,
Jim.
Michael. Thanks. Jim Prendergast, and thanks for slotting the brand registry group comment in under me. I was feeling kind of lonely out there by myself. As I was thinking of this, those of you who worked with applicants in the last round, it's tough to do this over a call, but, I'm pretty sure every single one of you had clients that were astonished that ICANN refused to negotiate with applicants. It's just not something that people were used to. Instead, they were forced to accept what basically is, for lack of a better description, is a franchise agreement, where ICANN gives you the ability to go and operate a TLD, but it's got to fit within the square boxes of the registry agreement. And, I think moving forward, as we move into the next round, I think we're going to see innovation beyond what we've seen before in this round. And I think that having a single base registry agreement prohibits, I think, or will stunt some of the innovation that, frankly, I can't come up with, but others smarter than me with, better resources and funding than me will come up with. And I think there are things that are within the base agreement that, frankly, do need the ability to be negotiated, things like SLAs. I know we've heard from brand registry operators that they don't think they need to be held to the same types of SLAs from a technical performance standpoint that, the entrepreneurial generic types are being held to because, frankly, the domains that are being registered are not going outside their company. Variable pricing rules, changes to how you treat registrars. That's blanket across the board, but there may be some innovations going forward where you want to change that relationship. I hate to bring it up, but the 800-pound gorilla in the room right now is GDPR. There are going to be some registries that may not be able to have who is as it's currently defined within the registry agreement, whereas others will. So I do think there needs to be flexibility. I do think there needs to be negotiation. Otherwise, we're stuck with a vanilla contract that everybody's got to apply to, perform to, and frankly, I think that limits the ability for folks to innovate down the road. And then, I think my comment about the resources for compliance stands. I mean, I think it's pretty clear. We all know ICANN's spending a lot of money in a lot of different places that are some think are questionable, and redirecting those resources to having a robust compliance program that is able to handle multiple contracts, I think is something we need to talk about. Next.
Thank you, Jim. Does anyone else have a comment that they'd like to add to this? I know Trang has also offered. Jeff, I'll let you jump in because I know you need to leave early. So.
Thanks. This is just a question back to just further the conversation. So understand, Jim, that like your GDPR issue is a good one and there may be some other ones. How do you accomplish that while at the same time making sure that if it's just general legal boilerplate, let's say like indemnities or limitation of liability, how do you make sure that for fairness sake that everyone is on a level playing field while at the same time taking into consideration certain differences that may be required? Is there a way to do that? If so, how would you recommend that be accomplished? So in other words, you know, let's say Apple Computer wants to have a change. Do they have more power to get a change in limitation of liability than, let's say, a smaller a smaller company? Like, how would you set those limits?
Thank you, Jeff. Jim, I'm going to let you respond. Jim, I'm going to let you respond in just 1 second. I just want to say, John Nevitt has also posted a comment. I just want to say we're not going to talk about how the GDPR process can be handled in depth. As an example, it's good, but let's not make that the hard decision. Jim, please go ahead.
Yeah, sure. No, I just threw that as an example. That's probably more bright than since when I submitted my comment. Jeff, it's a good question about defining what the level playing field is, and I don't have the answer sitting here right now, but I think you're right. There does need to be a box that's drawn around certain provisions that says this establishes the level playing field as far as the contractual relationship with ICANN is concerned, but from a technical standpoint and the operation of the registry, I think the fewer burdens you place on registry operators when it comes to innovating and developing new models, the more successful the program will be. So, I'll be the first to admit I'm not a contract attorney. I know there's a few on the phone, but I think there could be a box around certain provisions that do establish what that level playing field is, but I do think we need to work together to define what that looks like.
Thank you, Jim. All right, Jeff has said thank you in the comments. I just wanted to point out really quickly, Trang has brought up a very good point as well about what would happen if we were to use multiple registry agreements, but under consideration is whether multiple individually negotiated RAs would create additional burden for the community who might be interested in tracking contractual provisions, various TLDs. So I think that gets into the heart of, or maybe reasoning behind why it was so difficult in the 2012 round, perhaps. Is Trang, is that what you're jumping at? Because of the multiple of registry agreements and who has what provision, it would be difficult to track how it changed from a core model. It's perhaps why that was in the original, that might have been the original reasoning behind ICANN not really going into negotiations too much. We can jump in that a little bit later if there is more in that area. But if not, I'd like to move on to the next excerpts. So some of these comments focus on the topic focus on high-level goals rather than the mechanisms of the solution. Some of these were that for the RRSG does not wish to comment on the mechanics of how this should be contractually dealt with by ICANN. However, regardless of the mechanism ICANN chooses, the process must be 100% clear and defined within the applicant guidebook or equivalent. there should not be any new on-the-fly exemptions made or new TLDs types classified once the application window is closed. So I think this might hint at the fact that some of the specifications that were originally not in the applicant guidebook did come out, and we did see additional TLD types created. And, of course, in our approach to this now, we hope to, the idea is to have predictability in there so everything is done through a transparent process when we move forward, of course. Another comment was provided by the RYSG, and the notion of a single registry agreement that contains certain clauses that may or may not be triggered based on the applications or the nature of the TLD versus a suite of registry agreements is in reality the same concept. That is to say that in both models, certain provisions will only ever apply to certain registry operations or TLDs, and the core provisions of the registry agreement remain the same. As such, neither model should be more or less effective in recognizing the different operational requirements of different TLDs. So the RYSG kind of comes up with the approach here that basically, depending on, no matter which route we do take, more or less we can achieve the same objective in recognizing different TLD types with different, either different specifications or different different registry agreements itself. And also we have a comment from Val Deus. A number of brands would have benefited from an application process and contractual provisions which better acknowledge the different drivers and priorities of a brand TLD. Specification 13 goes some of the way here, but additional brand-specific provisions or even a brand-specific contract would be beneficial. An entirely separate contract for brand TLDs requires careful consideration, however, as it has the potential to reduce the flexibility of registries. So in this sense, this is support for the recognition of brand TLDs. But I do believe that the Validatus comment itself was one that didn't push for the different TLD types as well. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Categories become more relevant if there are different application criteria or contractual provisions applied accordingly. Yes. So those are just some of the more factors that come into when we discuss this and are just more so guiding principles. As Susan, you can have your hand raised. Sorry about that. I was on a different page reading.
Yeah, thanks. Since you were referring to the Valdez comment, I thought I'd just quickly comment. What we were saying was that whilst certainly some of our brand clients definitely would favor, you know, a kind of a personalized contract, if you like. You know, we do recognize that does need some consideration because there is, there is an argument about the idea that, you know, you might have your kind of closed brand registry that you're operating, and you may, if you wanted to do certain things with your registry, you might have to weigh up whether you want to, whether you wanted to open your registry up and allocate names to customers and that kind of thing. And if you were to do that, then it's obviously a great deal easier when you have the kind of specification model or the master schedule model to take a particular spec or schedule off your contract rather than having, you know, one standard fixed contract which you then have to negotiate a new one, if you know what I mean. So, I'm favoring more of the kind of master schedule model rather than a lot of completely independent contracts. And that's what we were trying to say, that the idea of the completely independent contracts, has some downsides and does need consideration.
Thank you, Susan, for that feedback. And I just wanted to kind of end this topic itself saying that I went through and counted, or at least which side favors which. I think we received about 15 comments in regards to this specific topic. And while about 11 of them clearly supported the master schedule or the core agreement with the specifications or the different schedules. And at the same time, I think about two of them clearly supported different multiple registry agreements, and two of them were, as we read in the last section, a little bit more focused on high-level goals. So what we'll do is we're going to take that back in the leadership team, and then we're going to come up with a path forward, and we're going to see how that echoes the group in our next meeting. We are getting closer to the end of the hour. We have about 17 minutes left, so I would like to quickly go through as much as possible. A lot of good feedback in the chat. Once again, we'll take that back and reflect that in our deliberations moving forward. Very quickly, could we jump back to the slides where it has the question for 2.1.2, please? Thank you, Susan. Have a good week. Okay, so next we will be jumping to 2.1.2. This question focuses on a different aspect. Should further restrictions pertaining to sunrise periods, land rush, or other registry activities be developed? If so, do you have suggestions on attributes of these restrictions? Should they be incorporated into the base agreement? Should there be any restrictions established on registry pricing? I'm sorry, Steph, can we please jump back to the summaries document now? Thank you very much. Let's jump down now to the second page, about halfway down. So we had our first few comments here were from Inta John Poole, Valadeus, and Janik Skow that support additional restrictions pertaining to sunrise, periods, land rush, or other registry activities. In the interest of time, I'm just going to read one of the comments, and I think I'll go with the one from Inta. So, sample excerpts. Premium names and sunrise pricing. INTA understands that ICANN does not actively regulate domain name pricing, but contends that the registry practice of creating premium names and charging excessive pricing for such names, and of charging substantially higher prices for sunrise names generally than in general admission, but I'm just going to say GA because it's almost 1 o'clock and I can't remember exactly what it was. Runs contrary to the intent and acts as an effective circumvention of the RPMs. The sunrise period was created with the intent to protect rather than to exploit brand owners. It is important that consideration is given to how premium name schemes and sunrises can be operated without undermining the RPMs and discriminating against brand owners. B, reserve names. Many INTA members have reported that their trademarks have been withheld from the registration by new utility registry operators, thereby being unavailable during the sunrise period. In addition, ICANN has the authority to request lists of reserved domain names, but has refused to request and share such lists, which would allow brand owners to police improper reservation of names. C. Legal rights objection, LRO process. The legal rights objection process currently set forth in the applicant guidebook is defective as it is based upon claims of infringement which require use, and it is not immediately clear how one can use a TLD they have not yet been awarded. Rather than upon claims of bad faith application for a TLD and therefore does not meet the standard set forth under policy recommendation 3. Thank you, Greg. It is general availability. I just couldn't think of it at the moment. So this is one of the comments that we have. Would anyone like to comment in regards to the supporting the additional restrictions? I would like to point out, or at least bring up the question of a comment that was brought up in B. It says, in addition, ICANN has the authority to request lists of reserved domain names, but has refused to request and share such lists, which would allow brand owners to police the proper reservation of names.
I have gone through the registry agreement personally looking for such a provision where ICANN has the authority or would have the at least the permission to do so, but I have not seen anywhere in the registry agreement where that authority is given to ICANN. I'm sure they might have the ability to do so, but I don't think the authority is written within the contract itself. Unless somebody else could say it proper, I'd like to, that might be an interesting question to pose to INTA. John, thank you for joining us today, and have a wonderful week. None? Okay, then let's move on to the next section of excerpts, shall we? So, the next section of excerpts is from Nominet, BRG, Affilius, and RYSG supporting to maintain the status quo with respect to restrictions. And like I said, in the interest of time, I'm just going to read the one comment. It's from the RYSG. We'll do one from the RYSG. This sample excerpt says, the restrictions in relation to sunrise periods, land rush, and related activities are sufficient for the TLDs currently being delegated and will be sufficient for future TLDs. Specific launch plans, dates, and terms and conditions should continue not to be included into the registry agreement. Any restrictions on registry pricing in addition to that which is already contained within current registry agreement may stifle competition and innovation. So I think there's a strong... Jim Prendergast, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. Jim Prendergast for the record. You know, it's a question more than a comment, and that is a lot of this section touches on pricing and what the registries can do. I know ICANN is pretty explicit about why they are not, or explicit in saying that they do not regulate pricing in the new GTLD program. Does anybody recall the genesis of why that is? Because I think that may help address some of the previous comments about asking ICANN to limit premium names or limit sunrise fees, et cetera.
That's a great question, Jim. And if I had as much historical knowledge about this as some of our other veterans, then I might say that it goes back to the .com price freeze, but, Greg, please go ahead.
Thanks, Greg Chatton, for the record, and I have to admit I'm not entirely sure, and I do think we need to get more specificity on this. I believe that there are antitrust concerns at the root of this advice or position by ICANN. Whether, in fact, those antitrust concerns are well-founded or correct is a different question entirely, although I note that the original Jones Day lawyer who's represented ICANN since the beginning is an antitrust lawyer, so I'm sure his advice is not unfounded. Whether or not there are other views to be taken is a different question entirely. But I do believe it's based on concerns about horizontal price collusion, to use a popular word in the United States these days, though in different contexts. I definitely would not take that as the last word, but just a potential clue as to where it might be. And, again, as someone who's a recovering antitrust lawyer myself, I frankly think that advice is open to at least to examination, if not question and revision. Thank you.
Greg, does anyone have anything else they'd like to add on this? If not, I'd like to take the 7 minutes to go over the last section in regards to, the last excerpt section in regards to this question, and then what we'll do in the next call is we We'll try to pick up some deliberations in regards to these first two questions, and we'll bring them to the next call, I think, and then we'll also discuss last question first and foremost, and also discuss those other two deliberations. None? Okay. So I'm going to go through this last one. This was a comment provided by the BC, supporting maintaining current restrictions but pursuing additional measures regarding predatory pricing. We believe the current restrictions are working well to protect registrants and internet users. Regulations pertaining to pricing are generally outside the scope of ICANN's agreement. However, we are concerned about predatory pricing. Schemes by a couple of registry operators that have charged significantly higher fees for trademark terms during Sunrise. Such practices could be potentially dealt with in the future through more explicit fraud provisions and PICs, as well as regulations preventing use of TMCH data for purposes other than intended. So I think this is a comment that actually does kind of take a bit of what is from both sections, the ones that doesn't support the any further restrictions, and those that do support further restrictions. What would be good would to maybe use this as a guiding point for further deliberations and maybe a compromise moving forward between these two. Would anyone like to comment on the nature of this? Greg, please go ahead.
Hi, Greg Shatton again. I agree with the substance of this comment to the extent it regards what is called predatory pricing. However, I will note at the risk of being pedantic that in the legal sense, in the antitrust laws, predatory pricing actually refers to essentially the opposite of what is being referred to here. Predatory pricing specifically is used to mean pricing below cost in order to drive out competition who can't afford to lose the money, and then after that to assert a monopoly and to raise prices thereafter. So if and when we get to turning this into a report, we should use a term other than predatory pricing to refer to basically price gouging, which I think is probably what's intended here. I don't know if that's more or less pejorative than predatory pricing, but it has the benefit of being an accurate word and not misusing a legal term. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg, and that is very important. We will keep that in mind for the final report. Does anyone have anything else to add? John Nevitt, you are typing, and I'd like to wait and actually see what you have to say. And you're no longer typing. Oh, you're typing again. No need. Okay. All right, then. I think we've reached a good point to stop. I know we didn't get through everything today, but I think we're headed in a good direction. Does anyone have any other business they would like to bring up in the last 3 minutes? Nope, because they're already leaving. All right. Thank you very much, for coming today, and have a good night. This is Michael Fleming saying good night from Tokyo.
Thank you all. Today's meeting is adjourned. Please disconnect online. Have a great day.